Okay, so we come here today to look into our minds and develop peace. So that's what we do when we meditate. Just to close our eyes is a very simple activity, and just to allow our minds to just be in the present moment. Just to be able to get away from thoughts about the future or thoughts about the past. You know, the disturbances of the mind. Yeah. If you look at the Buddhist teachings, the Buddha talks about the hindrances. And basically what they are just the disturbances of the mind. So as a meditator, after a while, you can sort of sense through your own experience what is a disturbance and what is peace. Yeah. And usually the signs of peace that you can experience in your mind is just being able to be in this present moment. And it is surrounded by silence. Yeah, there isn't much going on. There isn't much thinking. So if you have the ability to just sit and just to be aware of the present moment, yeah, there's nothing special to it, with very little disturbance, then yeah, I think you know how to meditate. Yeah, it's quite simple actually. So, but what do we do when we have these disturbances that arise within our own minds? We all experience that. You know, one of the things that we get is sloth and torpor. Yeah, we all know what sloth and torpor is. You sit there and you just fall asleep. And you know, sometimes you can just look at it and just analyze and just to see what is actually in front of you. So in those kinds of states of mind where there is a hindrance, yeah, just understand a hindrance is a hindrance. When something like that is in the mind, there is no there's no peace. Yeah, there's either a hindrance or there's either peace within the mind. So if you think about it, when you have sloth and torpor, are you peaceful? No. And when you have restlessness, are you peaceful? No. When you have anger, are you peaceful? No. When you have desires, you know, sometimes we desire for, you know, the deep meditations. You have desire. Do you have peace of mind? No. So what do you do when you come across those situations where the hindrances are in the mind? And that's one of the questions a lot of meditators, they go see a teacher and they talk about their hindrances and they ask about ways to overcome them. Because sometimes it just seems like their minds are just overwhelmed with hindrances and there's no peace there to be found at all. And I think one of the things that I've learned over the years is that these things, they don't last forever. These hindrances, they don't last forever. They may stay in the mind, but if you wait long enough, they will disappear. Yeah. You know, you can't be angry forever. You can't be sleepy forever. It just comes and it just goes. So when we have this understanding of the mind, and then we can start to, you know, develop an attitude of peace or an attitude of patience towards whatever is happening in the mind. So yeah, that's what when Ajahn Brahm talks about, you know, you just sit there and you do nothing. I think that's what he means. You just do nothing. You're just an observer And you don't mind whatever, you don't mind whatever's showing up in your mind, whether it's sleepiness, peacefulness, anything like that. You don't mind. And you're sitting there and you're just observing, and you're just allowing the mind to just develop by itself. Just develop by itself in a sense where it's like a tree growing in the forest. You know, you don't make a tree, you don't make a little seedling grow into a tree. You don't make that happen. It just happens by itself. It just happens through time. And the development of the meditation, or, you know, the growth of the meditation is done by doing the practice, meditating on a regular basis, giving life to the meditation process, and that's done by having a meditation practice, doing it every day, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, a consistent practice. So you can actually build up a momentum, you can build up the peace, you can build up the meditation. And that's when you can start to see growth. You can start to see the meditation deepen. You can start to see that you're getting some sort of benefit from the meditation practice. And that's when you know, this meditation works. It brings me peace, it brings me happiness. Brings me peace, it brings me happiness. So just a few pointers for you. Just understand that things are impermanent. They don't last forever within one's own mind. And the peace that you're searching for, if you're patient enough, if you're observant enough, these things will arise in your mind, and you're just a witness to it all. And you can reap the benefits of a peaceful mind. You can start to see the wisdom. You can start to see the wisdom of having a peaceful mind. You can just start to see in terms of like the wisdom in Buddhism, we talk about, you know, what isn't wisdom. And what isn't wisdom is when one is suffering too much. And then through the meditation, you can find kind of a remedy to that suffering. And that is when you start to see the wisdom in the meditation practice. You start to see that being in the present moment, being silent, that's a place where a wise person hangs out, because there is very little suffering there. And an unwise person, or a person with little wisdom, hangs out within the turbulence of the mind, the anxieties, the anger, and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, after a while, you get to see within your own minds what is beneficial for you and what isn't. And after a while, you get to understand what is beneficial, and you just hang out there. You just hang out there in the present moment, in the peace, and you just build that up. You know, you're a little seedling in the forest. If you want to become one of these great big trees, you have to give it time. You give it patience. And you just watch the process just grow by itself. And the only way you can watch is just doing the practice. Just doing the practice, just keep going. And then one day, you might be a big tree in the forest. Okay. So those are just a few words on meditation. Does anybody have any questions? Okay. So we'll just, I'll just guide you for, I think, the first 5 minutes. And then after that, we can sit quietly until 4 o'clock. So we just get ourselves into a comfortable position. And we're not fighting anything when we meditate. We're just being. We're just being. Yeah. Just living without, meditating without any expectations. Meditating without any fault finding. So that way we can meditate with a mind which is relaxed. You know, which is calm, which is peaceful. So what we do at the beginning is we're just setting our minds. Setting our minds for the meditation. And just being observers. We're being patient. And we're just here to witness the developments of our own meditation. We're just enjoying the process because we're able to meditate in a peaceful and calm way. So if anything, a helpful place to put your mind is in the present moment. See if you can find the wisdom that lives in the present moment. You can see that this present moment is a place where peace is found. You can see in this present moment that anger doesn't live there. You can see in this present moment that the anxieties and depressions, they vanish. So yeah, this present moment is a place where you can find an abiding, which is filled with contentment, filled with a sense of ease. And you're just placing your mind here and just allowing the process to grow from this point. Any questions? No questions? Any questions? There's one over there. Any questions? 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 It's time to ask.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Oh, sorry, Arjun. Sometimes I see, like, a lot of unhappy monastics, and I'm wondering, like, if it's better to be like an unhappy monastic, or like a really happy layperson?
Sorry?
Is it better to be an unhappy monastic or a happy layperson?
It's better to be an unhappy monastic, because I'm pro-monastics. Huh?
Can I just ask one question? How do you recover from your mother's suicide?
Oh, okay. That's a tough one. I don't know. unhappy monastic or a happy layperson. Yeah. You know, are you really a happy layperson? Or are you really an unhappy monastic? I guess if you're unhappy monastic, you might be an unhappy layperson as well. It's just really hard to tell. You can't predict your future. But yeah, I think it doesn't really matter whether you're a unhappy monastic, because I think through time, the unhappiness that you may feel is going to just drive you away from monastic life. Yeah, because I've been in monastic life long enough, and I've seen a lot of monks disrobe. Yeah, and you're coming. The monks, they come in with really good intentions. They'll be a monk for life, but for some reason, it doesn't work out for them, and I think it's due to the amount of unhappiness that they're feeling, and they are going through a lot. It's not an easy decision to disrobe, and it gets to a point where you can't really make up your mind. You just leave. Yeah. So yeah, it doesn't. It's. Yeah, it's just, you know, happiness is one of these things that that as human beings we're always trying to find ways to become happier, and I think our minds have just a certain amount of capability to be able to learn these things, and I think it's just through time where you just pick up different ideas and different ways of making yourself happier. And it just doesn't happen all at once. You know, sometimes you think you can just do a Buddhist, get a, like a Buddhist diploma at one of these Buddhist universities and you understand everything about the mind and you're gonna be happy after that. But it doesn't work like that. You can't put all this information in your head and expect it to work, because the mind has to mature. It has to grow and it has to change. Yeah, that's why I think, you know, with the the mind just changes over time. It's just really hard to kind of pinpoint when it changes or how it does. But I think, yeah, just through time, just being mindful of your own mind, you can understand what makes it happy and what doesn't make it happy. Yeah, and you work with that. Yeah. Because, you know, living in a monastery or just being a Buddhist, you just get taught these things and you just have to go on living your life. Yeah, there's no Ajahn Brahm sitting on your shoulder telling you what to do. Okay, now it's time to make peace, be happy, be gentle. Now it's time to not look at the two bad bricks. Yeah. You know, now it's time to go to sleep, wake up at 4 a.m. You know, you don't have like that kind of guidance in your mind just chattering away. Yeah. But instead you kind of learn, you just use these teachings and you just use them as, they just just pop up at the right time, and they just help you along the way. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any more comments or questions? Yeah, one over there.
Hi. I wonder why we say that the mind wanders. Why do we use this formulation when in reality it's the brain that is thinking? It's the brain that's making all those comments. It's not, I guess it's not the mind, right?
It's something. Yeah, it's an experience. Yeah, so you're just sitting there and you have an experience, I think. And then the mind thinks, or it wanders, or the mind is peaceful. Yeah, the mind, the brain. Does it really matter how we label it? We kind of understand what we're talking about.
But from Ajahn Brahm, I understand mind is like a sixth sense, and brain is an organ inside our head. So, how do I differentiate between these two?
The brain is, you could sort of say the like our brains are unique because we have a human being brain, right? And you could sort of see it in a way where the mind is living within the brain, the mind goes into the body of a human being, and it just uses this body to kind of express itself. You could say that. Yeah, so just take for example, like disabled people. Their mind goes into a brain where it's disabled, but it doesn't really reflect on what the mind actually is. It just, the mind is only has a limited capability of expressing itself. So in a sense, our minds are limited to our brains. Yeah. Say an animal, you can get reborn in an animal, and you could say like maybe there's a limited intelligence is because of it's just the capability of the animal's brain, like say a dog or a cat.
So you mean a person who is, for example, mentally disabled would have a different mind?
No, I don't think it could be the brain. The physical structure of the brain,
yeah, exactly.
Which kind of limits the mind to kind of intellectualize and, you know. So when you get brain damage, like you get a stroke, parts of the brain gets damaged, yeah. And then you can't speak or you can't do things. So the brain is limiting the ability of the mind. Yeah? Yeah. So that's why, like, when Ajahn Brahm talks about deepening the mind in meditation, and the mind kind of surpasses the brain, and then it can have more kind of like knowledge or understandings of the world. Yeah.
Thank you. And yeah. My other question is, what is it that we take with us after we die?
Oh, it's really hard to say. Yeah. Our minds just go. You know, our minds, you know. It's hard to say. It's just really hard to understand because now we're living in a human body where we have a brain and a mind, and it's really hard to differentiate what is the mind and what is the brain, if you think about it, unless you have some other ways to get more kind of experience to. So with the meditation, it helps you get really deep in the meditation where the mind separates from the body. And that's where you get the understanding from. It's the mind that moves from life to life. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank
yeah.
You.
Another question?
I just had one more question. It's just... it's like I have been meditating like for a while, but it seems that I'm repeating what the Buddha said, what other sages said. It's just, I feel like I'm like a tape recorder. It's like all the insights that I have, it's like borrowed from somebody else. I have not been able to gain insight into the reality of anything at all.
What's that?
I haven't been able to find the reality of anything. I'm just repeating what I have heard from other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that source of knowledge is from books, from other people.
Yeah.
But I haven't been able to find like a real source of understanding. I don't think that what I have gathered, it's not working in my day-to-day life. It's somebody else's experiences, not mine.
Yeah. I think, like Buddhists, we do have this element of faith and belief. Yeah, like, it's like, how much do we truly understand the law of karma or rebirth? Is it real or is it just a belief? Yeah, so as a Buddhist, I think we come into and we just enter a religion where there's belief behind it. So there's in a sense, we don't really know. Yeah, we don't really know, and I think that's perfectly okay. That's just a part of human beings and our ability to just believe in something and not really know. Yeah. So that's why we're able to believe in different religions and all this kind of stuff, God and things like that. We don't know that it's true, but we believe it. And that's just how the human mind works. So, but in terms of making like these teachings your own experience, we can use reflection. Yeah. Say the idea of making merit. Yeah, you go make some merit, you help somebody, you do it wholeheartedly. You know, the sages or the monks, they tell you, if you do something like that, you get happiness in return. Yeah. So you try that and then you think about it. And if you are getting happiness in return, then, you know, there's something correct about this Buddhism or what the monks are saying. So instead of becoming like a belief, it becomes a truth because you are actually living it out. Yeah. And then when they talk about meditation, like meditation is always a nice thing. You can always experience the present moment and the peace, and that becomes your own experience. Yeah, and that's the nice thing about, I think, when your beliefs, they start to manifest and become like a reality to you, you have more kind of trust and more kind of faith in what the teachers are saying. Yeah.
Is it possible to find out something about this reality right now? Like, but instead of, if the question, like, it feels like everything comes to time. It's like, with time, I would become enlightened. With time, I would become happy. But what about now?
I'm
not happy now, so that's a fact, so.
Yeah, so you're suffering. So
yes.
you can do something about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You can do something about it. You know, meditate, make some good karma. Yeah, you can
do something about something it. Now instead of in the future? Or
sorry?
Can I understand something right, like now or something, like in the present moment? It's like the whole meditation is like after meditation you feel peaceful, but that peace doesn't. It's if you remove the. Like the effect of concentration, it fades away, but it doesn't.
Yeah, because it's just the mind just having craving. Yeah, so you're like looking into the future and just craving for the results. And then after a while, you can start to understand that craving, it becomes a hindrance to the mind. It becomes a disturbance. So, and you start to understand that that craving doesn't give you what you want. It just gives you more headaches. So you stop the craving. Yeah. And just live in the present moment. Living in the present moment. The truth is you don't really know if you're going to reach nirvana or not, but you have a little bit of faith. You've seen living examples. You know, there are some monks, some nuns out there that have actually attained, and also the Buddha, You know, he was a human being living on this earth. So there are people out there that have reached the goal. So, you know, those are the examples that kind of give us a bit of faith to just stick with it, even though we don't know. Yeah. And the thing is like being a more virtuous person, a person who lives with morality, who's living in the present moment, who's not anxious, that's not a bad way to live. And that's all we're doing as Buddhists. We're just walking along the path of, you could say, goodness. Yeah. Yes. Sorry? The mind, a part of consciousness. Like,
when you go to sleep and you're not dreaming, when you go to sleep and you're not dreaming, there's no world, there's no God, there's nobody. It's only, problems only arise when consciousness arises, when you wake up in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah. So consciousness is like a knowing. Yeah, there's a knowing and there's a doer.
It seems to me though that consciousness is the culprit.
Just living a life. Just living a life causes suffering. Yeah, I mean, but then it also gives us a reason to work with our minds. Yeah, if we live in times where there's no suffering, there's no reason to work with the mind to enlighten it. Yeah, so yeah, you could sort of see that, you could sort of view consciousness as a negative thing, but also you can view consciousness as something that you can work with.
Oh yeah, you've got to work with it, yeah.
You work with it and you, yeah. Okay. Any more questions? Comments? No? Or just, oh, another one? Yes? Okay.
Hi, I'm from Singapore, together with my family over here. I have a question related to meditation. So I started meditation not too long ago, just probably about 2 months and a bit intermittent, on and off. So there was an experience that I had. Let's say I was walking in the toilet from the basin to the shower head, and then that moment took only like 1 to 2 seconds. And then I think I just started, there was like a Chinese New Year period, and then there was this moment where I washed my hand, I walked, while I was walking over, I think my consciousness automatically snapped to my nose, like I became like, oh my God, everything felt so slow, and I was like aware of everything around me, and I could remember the exact moment it happened. And I freaked out a little bit, because I was like, oh my God, what is this? And yeah, so it felt like I that feeling felt like I was meditating, but in very slow motion.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So what was that actually?
I think sometimes when we first start to meditate, we have these weird experiences. But if you meditate long enough, these weird experiences don't really mean anything. For some reason, it's like sometimes our minds just focus on something that happened to us and we just turn it into a big thing. But in reality, it's not such a big deal. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, when your mindfulness gets a little bit stronger, you might be able to focus on things and see things in a different way. Say, like, it just really depends on how powerful the mindfulness becomes. You could sort of recall one of Ajahn Brahm's stories where when he got deep meditation, he had a look at the bamboo and it was the most beautiful bamboo in the world. And that's kind of like created by the mind with like a lot of mindfulness. And yes, as meditators, we do have these experiences from time to time. And that's just perfectly normal. But then is like, yes, you may have kind of achieved something, but you still got more work to do. Yeah. you're still going to suffer. So you have to work with the suffering. Yeah. And the meditation kind of helps you kind of develop just a more healthier mind to deal with the sufferings that you may encounter in life. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, sort of, if you become a more peaceful person, a more even person, you can sort of understand that you are walking in the right direction. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. It's all right.
I just had a comment about what our friend asked, that he doesn't get any insight after meditation and it's all the same teachings. I want to say, basically, the teaching is you do meditation and you see things for what they are.
Yeah.
That is one of the biggest teachings, but it's too hard for us to accept that what we are sad over at this moment or what we are stressed over at this exact moment, this is something that is either in the past or in the future. And that is the biggest insight. If you get this insight that the reason I am unhappy is not this exact moment, but past or future, then you are actually liberated from your unhappiness. And the first step is actually like understanding the nature of it and then being brave to actually accept it. Because sometimes we see, I understand it's something about the future, but I still want it. And the next step is you actually understand, no, this is not something that you really want. What you really want is something different. So you actually get ready to give up. Yep.
Okay, yeah.
So it's not some light or something happening, but it's...
Yes, it's a personal... I think it's... Everybody has their own version of Buddhism and practice. Yeah, I think because... You know, we perceive the world in a different way. We think in a different way, and we just process things differently to one another. So everybody's on their own journey, and just working with their minds basically, and just trying to be more even and more calm at the end of the day. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. So I just quickly answer these questions. Is that okay? Or yeah, okay. I would like to ask Ajahn about boredom in meditation. How do we give rise to joy in meditation and joy in letting go, since I feel like my body wants to be somewhere else and not enjoying where I am? Yes, sometimes when this happens, I think a good teaching that we can reflect upon is the good enough teaching. Yeah, when... You know, sometimes we've been meditating a little bit too much and we're not enjoying the process, and it becomes, you know, like a chore. It becomes boring. Sometimes we have to change our perceptions and how we look at the meditation. So the good enough meditation always helps. Yeah, it's good enough. If you have defilements in your mind, it's good enough. If you're sleepy, it's good enough. If I'm not getting anywhere in my meditation, that's good enough as well. So this helps. Yeah. Okay. Dear Ajahn, I woke up with a lot of anxiety from sleeping yesterday. Trying to meditate last night did not work. I think my blood sugar level was low. It's okay to eat after 12 p.m. because this is a health problem. 8 precepts. Yeah, I think so. Like, take for example, we had a monk who was suffering from digestive problems. Yeah, he was getting really sick, losing a lot of weight. And because of that, he ate in the afternoon. Yeah. So, you know, sometimes you have to be practical and be wise. And you're not doing it because you're feeling greedy or you want something delicious to eat. Yeah, you're doing it for your health. So, yeah, I think it's perfectly okay. If you are on the 8 precepts and after 12 p.m., you just have something to eat to just keep your health well. Yeah. Okay. And the last question. Dear Ajahn, I would like to deepen my practice and was wondering if staying close to the monastery or Kusala hermitage as a layperson or Upasika will help. Appreciation on your thoughts. Yeah, I think, yeah, staying at Kusala, just come stay with us. Why not? We need some help. Yeah, I think it is a good idea to put yourself in a good environment. Yeah, and it does really help. Because if you think about it, if you decided to be gang members today and you put yourself in that environment, you don't keep the 8 precepts, you don't meditate, you're out there to take revenge on people, you're out there to harm people, you know. And if you surround yourselves in that environment, what type of person would you become? So, in the same way, if you put yourself in an environment where the people are kind of decent, you know, monks and nuns, we're okay. You hang out with Ajahn Brahm, you live out in the forest, you're keeping the precepts, you're living mindfully, you know, what kind of effect would that have in your mind? That will have a good effect. So I think it's important to put yourself in a healthy environment, because the truth is, humans are, we're not kind of solitary animals by nature. We kind of have to socialize from time to time. Yeah. So you may as well just put yourself in a skillful position to help your, to elevate your mind, to make it happier. Okay, so yes, come join Kusala. Okay, we can pay respects.